to tell the truth, Article 10, what does it take to tell a convincing lie? If you go on the, I know, practice. That's always the best way to tell a convincing lie. But I went on the internet this week, and there was an amazing amount of information as to, hey, you know, if you want to be a convincing liar, here's some practical hints. And I thought, that's kind of a sad commentary, isn't it? You know, that people would take that much time and thought to kind of encapsulate what it takes to be a good liar. But that didn't mean I turned the internet off or went to another site. I just condemned it as I read it. But as I read it, I saw there really is a protocol. And it seemed like there were four points that just about all these contributors agreed on. First, keep a straight face. It's hard to tell a convincing lie if you're kind of laughing or smirking. Second, be sincere. Don't be laughing or smirking, but don't try to oversell it either. Just be sincere. Third, look your audience in the eye. You know, if you're trying to convince somebody of a lie, you don't want to be looking at the floor, looking at the ceiling. You want to look them in the eye. And fourth, and most importantly, try to incorporate some element of truth into your lie, something you know that your audience already accepts as true, because that makes the whole lie more palatable or easier to take. It's like Mary Poppins once said, you know, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, and a little bit of truth makes a lie a lot easier to swallow. Well, that's really what the Church of Latter-day Saints does. By attaching themselves to Christianity and incorporating terms that are common in Christian vernacular, they make the heresy just a little easier to swallow. Last week, we started looking at Article 10. We looked at the House of Israel and the regathering and all that entails. This week, we finish Article 10. Just to refresh your memory, I think I put it on your outline. We believe in the literal gathering of Israel and the restoration of the 10 tribes. That was last week. That Zion, the New Jerusalem, will be built upon this American continent. There's a little news. That Christ will reign personally upon the earth, and that the earth will be renewed and receive its paradisical glory. Basically, the Garden of Eden. So we have the New Jerusalem, we have Christ reigning, and we have the earth restored. And you know something? As a Christian, I can say, how, there will be a New Jerusalem. Christ will reign personally, the earth will be restored. So what's the problem? Well, that's what we're going to look at this week. When the Church of Latter-day Saints talks about the New Jerusalem, what are they talking about? Because I guarantee you it's not what the Bible's talking about. When they talk about the reign of Jesus Christ on this earth, what are they talking about? It's not what the Bible talks about. The nature, the scope, and the reason for that reign varies greatly. And the Edenic conditions, I think we can kind of agree on that. So we're going to look at that. And we're just going to very quickly walk through it. We're going to look at what the Church says. And we're going to look at what the Bible says. And then we'll take a vote. Do we go with the Church of Latter-day Saints? And depending on how you vote, your name may or may not be repeated into the recording. So we'll look at the New Jerusalem first. Because that's what they talk about first. There will be a New Jerusalem. Now, the Bible talks about a New Jerusalem, and the Church of Latter-day Saints talks about the New Jerusalem. First of all, let's look at the most important element of all real estate, location, location, location. According to the Book of Mormon, the New Jerusalem will be constructed or will be located on the American continent. Now, that is all the more specific the Book of Mormon gets. In 3 Nephi, it says that the New Jerusalem will be constructed by the faithful. And guess who the faithful will be? The Mormons. Will be constructed. This will be a major construction project. And it will be on the American continent. So you can read the entire Book of Mormon and say, well, you know, where does it say Salt Lake City? Or where does it say, you know, Jackson? Or where does it? It's not in there. It says in the Book of Ether. And in the book of 3 Nephi, it will be constructed by the faithful in the on the American continent. So we've got the American continent. The exact location has been left to the prophets. Joseph Smith, being the first prophet, had a couple different spins. When he was in Pennsylvania, do you remember the first place he said it would be built? Oh, mio, oh, mio, it will be built in Ohio. That's right. And Don't recognize that song? That's Cleveland, Ohio, in Cleveland, Ohio. But not in Cleveland. It would be built in Kirkland, Ohio. Smith received this revelation late, about 1928, 1929, when he was having problems in Pennsylvania. There was a large Mormon settlement out in Kirkland. Smith took several thousand followers and joined those people in Kirkland. And in fact, for years, there was an extremely large temple. There's still a large concentration of Mormons in Kirkland, Ohio, but there was a large temple in Kirkland, Ohio. Smith moved out there. But that was about 1828. In 1831, by 1831, times had started to get a little difficult for Smith in Kirkland. He still lived there another 6 years, but he received another revelation. And this revelation said that the New Jerusalem would be built where? Not Nauvoo. That's where they got kicked out of. In Jackson County, Missouri. Jackson County, Missouri, just right across the Mississippi River from what became Nauvoo, Illinois. Smith, in fact, while he still lived in Kirkland, traveled out to Jackson County, Missouri. He identified the exact location for the Garden of Eden. He said, this is where the Garden of Eden existed, and this is where the New Jerusalem will be built. And you know what Smith did, because he's a good businessman? He bought the land. That's a smart guy. He bought the land and held it in his name. He didn't buy it in the church's name. Not a bad gimmick. So 1831, and Smith died, even though Smith, at the time of Smith's death, the church had been kicked off across the river to Nauvoo. Smith died with the conviction, or at least the stated conviction, that Jackson County, which is around Independence, Missouri, would be the location. But after Smith's death, who comes along on the scene to take control of the church? Brigham Young, whose nickname, or I guess it's not... In the church annals, he's known as the Lion of the Lord. Brigham Young, the Lion of the Lord. Brigham Young comes along, and he says what? It's in Utah. Now, he didn't say Salt Lake City, Utah, because Salt Lake City didn't exist. But Brigham Young said, I have a new prophecy. God has changed his mind. We're going out to what was then the territories, but now Salt Lake City, Utah. So you had multiple revisions of God's will as far as the location of the New Jerusalem. Maybe it's going to be on the American continent. Where's that going to be? Kirkland, Ohio? No. Jackson County, Missouri? Well, maybe. Salt Lake City, Utah. Now, in the Bible, we look, and the Bible, and it's important to remember, when we talk about the New Jerusalem, in the Bible there is Jerusalem, and there's New Jerusalem. And in the Bible, Jerusalem is always used as that geographical place that we know today as the city of Jerusalem. You know, it's the same Jerusalem in 2 Samuel 5, David conquered the city. In 1 Kings, the temple is built there. In Acts 2, the church is started there. That's Jerusalem. But there is a new Jerusalem. When's the first time we really hear about New Jerusalem? Well, it's prefaced in the earlier prophets, but actually the New Jerusalem makes its appearance in Revelation. In the book of Revelation, Revelation 21:2, we don't need to turn to it right now, but basically John sees the New Jerusalem. And where does he see the New Jerusalem? Coming down from heaven. What has all... Put on your eschatological thinking caps. I know we're the time change and all. This isn't a good week to do this. What's already happened? By the time we get to Revelation 21, I mean, you know, just the book and the chapter tells you we're near the end. What are some of the things that have already happened? Has the tribulation happened? Yeah, it's over. Has the millennium happened? Yeah, it's over. By Revelation 20, the tribulation's over. By Revelation 21, has that final great white throne judgment happened? Yes. We're past all of that. What's happened to the heavens and the earth according to 1 Peter 3:10 and 12? They've what? Melted away with a fervent heat. And John sees a new heavens and a new earth. So you know something? Well, I think, well, New Jerusalem, when it comes down, it'll probably come down. Who knows? I don't know a geographical location because we have a new heavens and a new earth by the time New Jerusalem comes down. But the point is, who builds it? Where's it coming from? Heaven, and we don't know where it's located. We know it's coming down from heaven. So we have that location, location, location. Now, as I said, the New Jerusalem of the Church of Latter-day Saints is a construction project. And it's a construction project that will take place during that thousand-year millennial kingdom. Who builds it? The faithful, the Mormon faithful. Who builds the New Jerusalem of the Bible? Where's it coming from? Heaven. So who's built it? God. Be more specific. Can you think of a passage where Jesus talked about the construction of a New Jerusalem? John 14:2. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go, I will come again and receive you unto myself. This New Jerusalem, this is Jesus' personal construction program. This is what Jesus Christ himself is constructing. This is that place. This is that New Jerusalem. It is not constructed by human hands. It is not constructed by even what we would call the believers, even the Christian faithful during the millennial kingdom or any other time. This is a construction program solely by Jesus Christ. So, the location is not revealed to who? Is it revealed to Joseph Smith at Kirkland? No. Is it revealed to Joseph Smith about Jackson County? No. Or Brigham Young about Salt Lake City? No. It's not revealed. But where is it always revealed? It's always revealed in the Bible, isn't it? Not the location, but every description about it. Now, what does this say about God? If you're looking at the Mormon viewpoint on the New Jerusalem, what are some of the things that tells you about the character of God? If it's Kirkland, or maybe it's Jackson County, or maybe it's Salt Lake City, what does it tell you about God? He's inconsistent. He changes. He's not immutable. What else does it tell you? And keep in mind, why did the revelation change between Kirkland and Jackson County? New revelation, but new revelation based on what was going on in Jonathan and Joseph Smith's life. Yeah, Joseph, and you know, it wasn't persecution because Joseph Smith was a righteous man. Remember, Joseph Smith left Kirkland with arrest warrants out for him, with uncollected judgments for land fraud. I mean, this was the Joseph Smith. This is, and all of a sudden we have the circumstances change, so it's Jackson. What happens in Jackson that causes Brigham Young to get a new revelation? Yeah, persecution and the death of Joseph Smith. Hard times. Those are called what? Circumstances. So according to the Church of Latter-day Saints, we have a circumstance-driven God. He's not omniscient. He can't see into the future. He doesn't know these things will happen. You know, one of the greatest comforts we can have about God, I think, is that he is omniscient. He does know what's going to happen. He does know the best way, and nothing takes him by surprise. Now, if we go over to the biblical account, where there's only one New Jerusalem, one place, and one guy who's building it, what does that tell us about God? He's consistent. Who's in control? God. Absolutely. He's omnipotent. He's not taken by circumstance. He's not surprised. Which one is more reflective of the God of the Bible? Now, there's the New Jerusalem. Let's look briefly at Jesus Christ's reign and rule on the earth. Does Jesus Christ reign and rule on the earth? Please. Someone say yes. All right. Jesus reign. And when does that happen? Millennium. And what does the millennium follow? Tribulation. That's right. And the Mormon Church teaches that, kind of goes along that same timeline. They say there will be a time of tribulation, that basically that 7 years. And there are some real differences about what they about their timeline in the tribulation, but that's not what we're discussing today. Basically, they say that Christ will reign 4,000 years at the end of this time of tribulation. Now, their attitude about Christ's reign and what the Bible teaches dramatically differs. According to the church, Christ will in fact be in charge, but he will not be present to reign. He will come in on a periodic basis to make sure that things are running smoothly, but who's going to reign? The Mormon Church. Christ's reign will be carried out through the Church of Latter-day Saints. Now, here's kind of the timeline. According to the Church of Latter-day Saints, the tribulation is coming to an end. Christ returns. They teach the return of Jesus Christ. Of course, keep in mind who Jesus Christ is from earlier discussions. He appears in the air. He raptures all the Mormon faithful who are still alive on the face of the earth. He then resurrects all the Mormon faithful who are living in the spirit paradise. Okay? And we've looked at the spirit paradise and spirit prison before. They join Christ in the air. Who does that leave on the earth? The unrighteous. Christ immediately takes all the unrighteous from the earth, plus Satan, and tosses them into spirit prison. And that's where they stay for the 1,000 years. The earth is then purified by fire, okay, to wipe out all the effects of the tribulation. Edenic conditions immediately are instituted. Christ, the resurrected Mormon righteous, and the Mormons who have made it through the tribulation land on earth. By the way, these are the people who ultimately will inhabit the celestial kingdom. And then they begin to reign and rule. Of course, who are they going to reign and rule? Yet there doesn't appear to be anybody else left. That's solved. Christ then resurrects all the moral dead. All those individuals who have died outside the Mormon Church and are being held in paradise, and yet they really don't qualify for the celestial kingdom. These people will be allowed, the moral people, will be allowed to enjoy the millennial kingdom, but they will not reign and rule in the millennial kingdom, and ultimately they will go into that second-tier terrestrial kingdom, that second-tier, that business class heaven. And then we sail through the thousand years. That's what the Mormon Church teaches. Yeah. Yes. You go, that's from the Book of Mormon, but it's also from the Doctrines and Covenants. They flesh it out. They flesh out a lot of that. A lot of the eschatology is fleshed out through the Doctrines and Covenants. Yeah. So that's just kind of in a nutshell. Now, Christ reigns, but like I say, it is not a day-to-day reign. It is more of an absentee administrator. He checks in from time to time to make sure how things are going. What does the Bible say about Christ's reign during the millennial kingdom? Well, it's going to be, what is it going to be? What? Rod of iron. How extensive is the reign going to be? It's going to be complete and worldwide. Where does he reign from? Jerusalem. Doesn't reign from New Jerusalem. He reigns from Jerusalem. Why doesn't he reign from New Jerusalem? Because it's not here yet. That's right. It's not here yet. It's not here yet. Isaiah 1:16 says he rules in justice. It's a just reign. It's a personal reign. It is a day-to-day reign. Christ is personally present on the earth and reigns and rules on a day-to-day basis. This isn't an absentee landlord. This isn't the arrangement that God has today, where God himself does not sit on a throne in some capital city of this world and reign and rule. This is God himself, Jesus Christ, sitting in Jerusalem and actually reigning and ruling. Now, who reigns and rules with Christ? I mean, it's not the Mormon faithful. Who reigns and rules with Christ? Several groups. Martyrs. I heard martyrs. What martyrs? The tribulation martyrs reign and rule with Christ. Revelation 20. The martyrs reign and rule with Christ. Who else is resurrected to reign and rule? David. But David's part of who? Old or New Testament? The Old Testament saints. The Old Testament saints reign and rule with Christ. Daniel 12:2. Who else reigns and rules? The New Testament saints. But you notice, what is their relationship? Here we have Christ reign through a church. We have Christ basically ceding his authority to their church. What church do we have today that basically claims that they have that same power now? Yeah, the Catholic Church. And that's basically what they say, that God reigns, that Jesus Christ reigns through the church, through the Catholic Church, which they consider to be the universal church, and that the Pope is basically Christ's spokesperson on earth, and that he mediates everything else. It all goes out like he sits at the top of the pyramid, and everything else goes out from there. Well, you know something? As we've said before, Joseph Smith was a great admirer of the organizational flowchart of the Catholic Church. And that's really, I mean, we see that time and time again in both the terminology he uses and in the organization that he set up. Well, that's what this is. With the church at the top, and everything else flows down, and Christ occasionally dropping by just to kind of make sure things are going okay. You know, like an absentee landlord. Over here, what's the difference? Who's at the top of the pyramid? Christ is at the top of the pyramid. He mediates everything else through the martyrs of the tribulation, through the Old Testament saints, through the New Testament saints. These people are reigning and ruling with Christ, but you know something? They're reigning and ruling with Christ, not instead of Christ. And there's a huge difference. There is a huge difference between reigning and ruling with and reigning and ruling instead of Christ. All right. Get my place. All right. So we have his reign, but what's the purpose of the reign? What's the purpose of the millennial kingdom? According to the Church of Mormon, of the Latter-day Saints, it's very simple. The purpose is to establish the gospel of Mormon Church worldwide. That is the purpose. It establishes the true gospel of the Church of Latter-day Saints on a worldwide basis. It also is a time of reward for the faithful. And last but not least, and this term kind of feeds into their view of eternity, it is additional leadership training. Remember, who's going to be reigning and ruling instead of Christ? Well, the church, but specifically the Mormon faithful who've made it through the tribulation, and the Mormon faithful who are in paradise. And where do these people go after at the end of times? They go to the celestial kingdom. What's the ultimate goal? To become a god, to lead. This is additional training. This is additional training. To establish the gospel of the church on a worldwide basis, to reward the faithful for their faithfulness. When? Not now. You don't get your own planet until you've gone to the celestial kingdom and you've worked your way all the way through the different tiers of the celestial kingdom. And then, once God has determined that you've basically peaked out at the top of the celestial kingdom, right? That's when then you become, in effect, you become God. You will always be subservient to God because you are his spirit child, but you will have that same status. So you're not getting your own planet. You're on planet Earth still during this 1,000 years, okay? So look at the purpose. We're establishing the gospel of the church on a worldwide basis. We're rewarding the faithful for being faithful. I mean, isn't reigning and ruling a reward? Absolutely. And you're getting leadership training for that's going to hold you in good stead in eternity. Now, what's the purpose of the millennial kingdom according to the Bible? First of all, does it have anything to do with people, with us? The purpose of the millennial kingdom. I mean, think about that. Think about that. What difference does it make to you and me, in a practical sense, if we are raptured or if Christ comes before we die, we're raptured. If he comes after we die, we're already in heaven. What difference does it make to you and me if we're already in heaven? What difference does that thousand-year reign make? I mean, we're already in heaven, aren't we? Can it get any better? No. So it can't be about us, can it? It's not for us. Who is spotlighted in the millennial kingdom? It's all about who? Jesus Christ. It's all about Christ. Now, it's true that a lot of what he does is a wrap-up and a fulfillment of God's covenant promises with Israel. Israel will be established as that chosen people. But the reign, the millennial kingdom, and we should never forget this, the millennial kingdom is all about Jesus Christ. It's all focused on Christ. In Joel 3, and we don't have time to go to all these today, but in Joel 3, verses 15 and 16, it says that he rules as a demonstration of his glory. His rule will reveal the glory of Christ. In Matthew 25:31, he establishes his right to rule. The fact that he does rule establishes his right to rule. What was one of the major things that the Pharisees and Sadducees constantly challenged Christ on during his ministry? His authority, yeah. What authority do you have over us? What right do you have to tell us what the law says? What right do you have to speak for God? How dare you sit in the synagogue, open the book of Isaiah, and take us to town? Well, guess what? The millennial kingdom establishes Jesus' right to rule. It demonstrates for all of creation that right to rule. It's to deliver in Romans 8:19 and 21. It says he delivers creation. He delivers the created order. What does the Bible say? All creation does what under the burden of sin? All creation groans under sin. The millennial kingdom, Christ for a time delivers creation. And just as importantly, as was pointed out, it really focuses on Israel. What does Christ fulfill? What promises to Israel does Christ fulfill during the millennial kingdom? We can sum them up in one big thing called the big C. The what? The blessings, but the covenants. What are the covenant promises? How do we have them broken down? The first one, the big one, was Abrahamic. And in the Abrahamic covenant, there were three parts. Remember what they were? Land, seed, blessing. Absolutely. Land, seed, blessing. The land covenant was fleshed out in what? And what covenant kicked off the land covenant? Palestinian covenant. That's the covenant that was given through Moses in addition to the law. But the Palestinian covenant is that covenant where God lays out by meets and bounds, as we do today, what land Israel would inhabit. Israel's never occupied that land. Under whose reign did they come closest? Solomon. And yet, if you look at Solomon's reign, if you look at the record in the Bible of Solomon's reign, Israel itself occupied virtually no more land than they occupied under David. What they did was they conquered other land and put it to tribute. But Israel itself, while they controlled those lands, never occupied any territory much greater than what David had taken, because they just weren't big enough. They didn't have enough people to occupy those lands. At their best, under David and Solomon, at their very best, they occupied less than a third of the land that God promised. During the millennial kingdom, Jesus Christ, during that reign, Israel will occupy all the lands contained in the Palestinian covenant. What does that tell you about the population growth during the during the millennial kingdom? Yeah, it's just going to be an explosion. And that's going to be fine. Why? What are the conditions? Who's left on the earth? Yeah, the Christian. Now, how many Christians do you think will make it through the tribulation? Even if 1 million Christians made it through the tribulation, even if 5 million Christians made it through the tribulation, that's it for the face of the earth. Now, the resurrected saints, the martyrs, they're there, but you know something? We're going to be like the angels. No giving and taking in marriage, no birth. The procreation is going to come from those Christians who made it through the tribulation. So we know there's going to be a huge population. So, seed, what covenant addressed the seed issue? Davidic. Absolutely. The Davidic covenant. God said basically what? That there would always be a male heir of David, a rightful male heir of David to occupy the throne. Always. Always. And that's why it's so important that when we read the regal succession of that southern kingdom through the Old Testament, we see that up until the time when Israel lost its self-rule. Because people say, well, gosh, there wasn't an heir of David sitting on the throne in Matthew. Well, that's right. They hadn't had the right to rule in about 400 years. I mean, remember, by the time Christ came along, that had been suspended. Israel had no king for about 400 years. But when Jesus Christ comes along, he assumes the role. He goes back on, the seed of David. And finally, the blessing is in the which covenant? The new covenant. The new covenant, where God gives Israel a heart to know him. It's the new covenant as it relates to Israel. So what's the focus of the Latter-day Saints' millennial kingdom? Man, what's the focus of the Bible's millennial kingdom? That's the truth of every man-made religion. Every man-made religion, regardless of what verbiage they use, regardless of how they cloak it, man-made religions undeniably and invariably focus on the glory of man. That is true of every man-made religion. Christianity alone focuses on the glory of God, because who created Christianity? God. That's God's religion. That's God's book of theology. Now, how about those paradisical conditions? What does the Bible say? Now, in all fairness, the Church of Latter-day Saints says during this millennial kingdom, it will be paradise on earth. There will be basically what we say, longevity. There'll be ideal conditions. Of course, they say it'll happen after the ball of fire, but we all agree. What are some of the conditions on earth during the millennial kingdom? Satan's bound. And yet is sin bound. You know, isn't that the greatest condemnation of man? That even when Christ binds Satan, and when Christ binds Satan, the demons are bound too. Okay, it's not like, well, Satan's bound, but you know that the demonic influence is still around on the earth. Satan, the demonic influence is bound, and yet that 1,000 years proves that sin is really bound up in the heart of man. You know? That sin is a choice. It's not a matter of demonic possession. It's not a matter of satanic temptation. Sin is bound up in the heart of man. So Satan is bound. What are some of the living conditions? Fertility. Fertile soil. It really will be like the Garden of Eden. What else? Absolute peace. Lamb with lion. Which is literal. There will be peace in the animal kingdom. There will be peace animals between men. I told my wife when I got up this morning, I said, I had this terrible dream last night that I was attacked by a bear. True story. Not that I was attacked by a bear. That's a dream I had last night. Put that on your notes. Attacked by a bear and survived. And the bear looked a lot like our dog, only bigger. Got to get to bed earlier. What are some of the... How about what's the economy going to be? Economic prosperity. The Bible teaches that there's going to be economic. In Joel 21 through 27, it talks about the world. Joel 2, 21 through 27. Talks about there will be worldwide prosperity. Isn't that nice when you think about what we're dealing with today? There's going to be a time when there is worldwide prosperity. You know, there's never been worldwide prosperity. We live in kind of a vacuum. And if things are going well for us or things are going well for our country, it's like, well, that must be the way everybody lives. No. There's never been worldwide prosperity. How long are people going to live? Long time. I really like it because I wrote it down because this one, in Isaiah 65:20, that's the verse that talks about a man will plant a tree, basically outlive a tree. You know? Now, I planted a tree about 20 years ago and it died, but I look for longer trees. I think more of the giant redwoods and sequoias than the tree I just had to cut down last year. But basically, there's going to be a longevity. It's going to be those Edenic conditions. You ever read in Genesis about those lifespans? You know, he was born, and he lived 390 years, and then he beget this son, and he beget this son, and then he lived another 450 years. And you think, my goodness, what would it be like to live for 850 years? You know, and some days I look around and think, oh, I'm so glad we're not going to live for 850 years. I couldn't do this 850 years. But, you know, there's going to be longevity. Have you ever heard this one? They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Of course you do, because that comes from 2 Nephi 2:4. 2 Nephi 2:4, they will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Micah 4:3 says the same thing. Guess who said it first? Yeah, it's going to be a great time. It's going to be a peace in the animal kingdom. It's going to be a time of universal peace. Both the Church of Latter-day Saints and Christianity, you know, hold to those tenets. Hold to those tenets. But you know, why are these conditions going to exist? Because Christ is running the show. Because Jesus Christ is in control. If mankind was running it, we wouldn't have these things. Look around. This is what we get when man runs the show. Look around at our world today. Very quickly, the end of times. The Church of Latter-day Saints teaches that at the end of the millennial kingdom, Satan will be unloosed for a season. Does that sound familiar? Revelation 20. He's released for a season. Then he comes back, he deceives the nations. That after an unspecified time of deceit, the armies of Satan gather to fight the armies of God at New Jerusalem. By the way, during the millennial kingdom, New Jerusalem is being constructed by the faithful. It is a 1,000-year work project. In Jackson County. Well, I say Jackson County. I'm right. It's Jackson County, isn't it? The church will tell you today it's still Salt Lake City. In Jackson County, in Independence, Missouri, the Church of Christ owns the original location where Joseph Smith stood and said, this is the Garden of Eden. Now, when I say Church of Christ, I'm not talking about the Church of Christ that says, don't play the piano in the auditorium. I'm talking about the Church of Christ that broke from Brigham Young and his followers when they hightailed it off to the Utah, or to those territories. They said, no, Joseph Smith said, this is where it is. They stayed loyal to Joseph Smith's older brother, and they formed the Church of Christ, and they still have that land. They built a temple on it. If you go there today, they're there. It's the Church of Christ. On the land surrounding that location, the community of Christ bought land, and they built buildings. The community of Christ is located in Kirkland, Ohio. Those are the people who, when Joseph Smith said, it's not Kirkland, it's Jackson County, they said, no, you said Kirkland. And we're staying in Kirkland. They still own property in Kirkland, but they have buildings around the original location in Jackson County. And not to be outdone, the Church of Latter-day Saints owns and operates a very nice visitor center right outside that. Doesn't matter what they say, they still think they're going to be building in Independence, Missouri. So, the armies of Satan come against the New Jerusalem in Jackson County. Not a good time to be in New Braunfels, or to be down in Branson, you know. So yeah, you see that coming. If you're in the millennial kingdom, you know, don't go to Branson that week. They come up against the armies of God, the righteous armies of God, who are composed of who? The Mormon faithful. Those Mormons who have been reigning and ruling, and the Mormon faithful who have been converted during the millennial kingdom. And the Mormon faithful, the armies of God, defeat the armies of Satan. They are judged. Satan and those armies are put in outer darkness. We've looked at their concept of outer dimness before. Christ then gathers all the faithful to him, judges, and divvies up the three heavens. And they go into eternity. But as we noticed, or as we studied weeks ago, basically who goes to outer darkness? Ultimately, who's going to end up in outer darkness? Satan, and who else? His angels and sons of perdition. And that's a real narrow group. There's only one person in this room that qualifies as a son of perdition. Because basically to be a son of perdition, you have to have embraced the truth of the Mormon church and rejected that truth. Other than that, the worst you can do is the lowest tiered heaven. You know, the worst you can do, even if you're an immoral person, is get to that celestial heaven. You have to be a son of perdition. So very few will find their way into that ultimate darkness. What does the Bible say? The 1,000 years ends. Is Satan loosed? You bet he's loosed for a season. And what does he do? Goes about deceiving the nations. And they come up to war. And what happens to them? How? Fire from heaven. Fire comes out of heaven and destroys those armies. Again, it has nothing to do with the armies of the righteous versus the armies of the wicked. This is all about Jesus Christ. The millennial kingdom has been all about Jesus Christ. The revolt ultimately is against Jesus Christ and his rule. And Jesus Christ takes care of it, not the armies of the faithful, not you and me. We'll watch. We'll see it. We will not initiate it or participate in it. Because you know something? It's not about us. It's all about Christ. And of course, then what happens, and we read it in Revelation 20, verses 11 through 15, it's the ultimate judgment. It says, I saw a great white throne and him who sat upon it, from whose presence heaven and earth fled away. No place was found for them. I saw the dead, the great and small, standing before the throne. The books were open, another book was open, which is a book of life. The dead were judged from the things which were written in the books according to their deeds. The sea gave up the dead. The death and Hades gave up the dead. And they were judged, every man according to their deeds. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. Apart from the gospel of Jesus Christ, that is the eternity of every man, woman, and child to walk the face of this earth. That is the eternity that will be realized by the Mormon faithful, by every man, woman, and child apart from Jesus Christ. What does it take to tell a successful lie? Be sincere. Look them in the eye. Keep a straight face. And incorporate just enough truth to make it believable. Let's close. Lord God, we thank you that there is a time coming when Jesus Christ himself will return. And we thank you that there will be a millennial kingdom, Lord, that we will view, that we will participate in, but it will be to the honor and glory of Jesus Christ, and it will not have anything to do with us. Lord God, may we live each day to honor and glorify you. May we live each day in anticipation of the coming of Christ, in anticipation of these last days. And Lord, as you bring people into our lives who are not able to look forward to those times, Lord, may we share the truth. Lord, may we share the gospel with an urgency based on what we know is their ultimate end. And we pray this in your name. Amen.